Diabetes prevention to safety around water.
The Y fills the gaps
and bridges our divides.
But they can't do it without us.
Support your local Y today. Because where there's a Y, there's an us.
Read by members of the Y.
The Y, for a better us.
Debt. If you get in too deep, members of the NFCC, the National Foundation for Credit Counseling, can help you put debt in its place.
Credit cards took charge of my financial life. A certified credit counselor helped me get back in control.
Connect with an NFCC certified credit counselor at your local member agency today. We'll help you put debt in its place. Go to nfcc.org/stopdebt or call 877-410-6322.
Food. It nourishes, brings us together, and adds flavor to life. That's why it's important to wash hands, surfaces, and fresh produce.
It's Tony Mack and the Triplet with your hosts Antonio McBeth and Aaron Triplet, specializing in the world of sports.
I think they're the best team in the country.
Covering your favorite teams.
Alabama wins!
Touchdown!
And talking about whatever the hell they want.
Because he's a good coach. The good talent wants to play for him.
Absolutely not. This is ridiculous.
Now, here they are. Tony Mack and the Triplet.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to a divisional round Saturday here on Tony Mack and the Triplet. That's right. There will be quite a bit to talk about, so you can weigh in at 866-485-9867. That'll put you in line to talk to me about the big list of topics we have to get to today. You can also tweet at me at Tony Mack UMP. That's TonyMacUMP. All one word. Use either of those methods to contribute to the show. I'm just one man, so maybe you've seen something I haven't. Those are good ways to let me know about those. Now, as far as what's on the slate for today, well, let's start with what's going on here in the studio. It is just Tony Mack here today. The Tony Mack half is in studio, the Triplet part of the show. Won't be here today. He's got to take his boys to a basketball tournament, and I don't mean his children. I mean his team. He is the coach of the ninth grade. He's one of my best friends. I should probably know that. All I know is he coaches basketball. He's the assistant for varsity. So he's got a tournament today. Varsity's game got canceled last night, but Aaron is still tied up today. He won't be here. Now, if he's listening, he's probably going to text me what he's actually coaching. I don't listen very well, I guess. But he's got a basketball tournament to take care of today. But let's get to a local story before I get myself in any more trouble. San Francisco linebacker. Yeah, I know you're sitting there thinking, hey, you just said local. We're in Alabama. It's not sunny and 70 degrees. How is that local? Well, imaginary interrupting listener, think about the 49ers linebackers. Okay, can you think of one that might be from here? Maybe he's from Auburn, but played at Alabama and had some combine issues last year. Oh, you mean Reuben Foster? I sure do, imaginary listener. I sure do. Well, Reuben was in Tuscaloosa last night, where he was arrested on second-degree possession charges. Now, second degree is only a misdemeanor here in Alabama, so there's really nothing to worry about there. Reuben also plays in California, where recreational marijuana just became legal. So if he were at home, this wouldn't be an issue. But I'm taking the same stance that I always have on this. And it's that pot is pot, but it's illegal here in Alabama and most other places in the United States. And as an athlete, someone who makes a lot of money, who has a lot to risk over stupid things like this, what are you doing? We've got to be smarter. I get it. I know where athletes stand on pot. And there are a lot of things I agree with them on when it comes to using marijuana for medical reasons. But just because you believe that so much, you may be right and the league may be wrong, which the league is wrong on a lot of things, but it's the league. It's the law as well, more than just the NFL. It's, you can't do it. Whether you think it's right or not, it's not allowed. So stop it. And even more so, it's legal where you play football now. In California, it's legal. So that should be even more of a deterrent for you to bring it home. Oh, well, I can do this when I get back. No problems. So stop. You don't have enough self-control to leave it at home for just a little bit? Come on, man. That's not just for Reuben Foster. That's for everybody. I mean, we see college kids getting pulled over and getting in trouble and arrested for marijuana all the time. NFL players all the time. Now, I get that it's not that big of a charge, and I'm not talking, when I'm talking about you guys getting arrested for pot and everything, I'm not talking specifically, and this is the argument they want to bring down, it's just marijuana, you act like this, and it's just marijuana. No, I get that. I'm more so judging your character. I'm more so judging who you are as a person that doesn't have enough self-control to leave something at home that you know is going to get you in trouble. You don't have that thing in your mind that tells me I need to be a better person. You've got an ego because you're a professional athlete, you're a famous person, famous people in general have egos that says, oh, I won't get in trouble with this, or if I get in trouble, I believe so much that it's right and it needs to be the way to go, so I'm willing to take that risk. Oh, you sound like a hero, but get over yourself. That's not the case. You're selfish. You have no control. Just leave it alone. I mean, come on. Unbelievable. So, Reuben, he, as far as last night, as late as last night, around 10-ish, he was 10:30. He was still in jail, still locked up. Bail was $2,500, I think. So, you know, he'll probably end up paying a fine. The fine will probably be pretty hefty. I don't know the details of Reuben's contract, but I'm sure he can afford the fine that he's going to have to pay. But it's probably a fine that no one wants to pay. So just leave it at home where it's legal. Well, unbelievable. Just something I'm never going to be able to wrap my head around. Is that whole situation with people and marijuana. But something else that I'm not going to be able to wrap my head around for a while, if this comes to fruition. Now, it's not a guaranteed thing. It's just kind of a little rumor going on, and those happen all the time in sports. More so in football. And that is the case with one Ken Niumatalolo, the longtime head coach at Navy. He's been there 10 years. Well, he was absent from campus in Annapolis, Maryland yesterday because he is believed to be the lead candidate for the Arizona vacancy. Think about that. He would have to go to the Pac-12 South with the likes of Chip Kelly, USC, and Kyle Whittingham. Yeah, I mean, you can look at this thing however you want to. If he takes this job, you can say, well, okay, well, he's avoiding Stanford, Washington, Oregon in that division, but down here in the Pac-12 South, and historically with what we're about to see, I would say is going to be tougher because you've got Chip Kelly about to come to UCLA, and he's going to dominate the athletic offensive talent, most likely, when it comes to recruiting. Because he's got incredible pull out there in the West. He's got a proven system that works in this conference. So there's no doubt in my mind that he's probably going to be on top of that division within a couple of years, the way we see first-time head coaches at universities make turnarounds since 2000. I mean, you've had Bob Stoops in his second year win a national championship. You've had that all over the place. Nick Saban went undefeated in his second year at Alabama, won a championship in his third. I don't know how long Urban Meyer was at Florida, but he wasn't there long before he won a championship. I mean, the list is on and on. Gus, you know, went to a championship in his first year at Auburn. And Kirby now, his second year at Georgia, went to a national championship game. So there's no doubt in my mind that Chip Kelly in his second year at UCLA, maybe not this year, but his second year at UCLA, could compete for the Pac-12 South Division. That's not far-fetched. And that shouldn't be far-fetched at all. So if Niumatalolo is to take this job at Arizona, that's something he faces. It would be Chip Kelly, Kyle Whittingham, who's had incredible success at Utah, by the way. I think he's like 11 or 12-1 in bowl games now. He's only lost one bowl game ever at Utah. He took over after Urban Meyer brought Utah to what it was. Whittingham oversaw it getting put into a Power 5 conference and has held his own. I don't think he's won it yet. He hasn't won the Pac-12, but he's definitely held his own. He's done an incredible job keeping Utah a relevant Power 5 program. Now, they're not one of the first programs by a long shot to pop into your head when you think Power 5. I get that. But they're not one of those programs that when they get mentioned, you say, oh, man, that's an awful school. It was a mistake for them to go up to Power 5. You don't think that at all about Utah. You think when someone mentions Utah to you, you think that is a stable, solid program, and Whittingham has done an incredible job to make sure it is maintained and sustained that way. Now, I don't know if you caught this or not, but when I explained that Niumatalolo, if he were to take this Arizona job that he's rumored to take, he would go to the Pac-12 South with Chip Kelly, Kyle Whittingham, and USC. I didn't mention the coach at USC. It's Clay Helton. I didn't mention the coach because, one, I mean, Clay Helton did just win the division in the conference. But number two, I feel like even if Clay Helton, who was probably going to be on the hot seat next year, I wouldn't be surprised. No matter who you put at USC, if there's just a step up from Clay Helton that goes to USC, you have to watch out for that program. They're a very great historical football program. The talent flocks to USC. So think about that. That's what Ken Niumatalolo would be getting himself into at Arizona. Now, Arizona Jay, I'd love to hear from him and what he thinks about potentially the head coach of Navy stepping in and taking over for Rich Rodriguez, who's had a whole bunch of problems off the field as much as on. But here's the upside. We've all watched Navy at least once a year forever, right? So how awesome would it be if Niumatalolo were to go to Arizona and take over? Because Khalil Tate, look no farther than the quarterback. Ken Niumatalolo and Khalil Tate would be a dream come true. I mean, am I wrong there? Just think about some of the players, and one in particular has to stick out to you, that Niumatalolo's gotten to coach. Keenan Reynolds, a very, very good, very important quarterback in terms of thinking history of college football. Shattered some records at Navy while doing it as a running and passing quarterback. That's something Khalil Tate's Khalil Tate has a little something of that, a little bit of that in him. Excuse me while I have a minor stroke. Can't get my words out here. Khalil Tate's got a little bit of that in him. Don't get me wrong, I'm not saying he's going to be a Keenan Reynolds, because as of right now, that would be a little far-fetched. But Niumatalolo could really polish that kid up. I would love to see that. We also have the NFL. I mentioned it is a divisional round Saturday today. We have the NFL divisional round playoffs today. That means after tomorrow, when I'm done here on the air, and after tomorrow night, when everybody's getting ready to go to work Monday and they realize, oh crap, it's a holiday, we don't have work Monday, and they're sitting on their couch with their kids because they don't have school on Monday. Shout out MLK. They're going to think, wait, we have, now that Saturday and Sunday are over, we have our AFC and NFC championship matchups. That's right. Just four more games, and we will have our matchups. 2 days. Starting today at 3:30. You got the Falcons going to Philly to take on the Eagles. Titans going to New England to take on the Patriots at 7:15 tonight. 13.5-point dogs, Tennessee going into New England. Now, I'm a Tennessee fan, guys. We're not going to sugarcoat this thing. There is no chance the Titans have. No, nobody's giving the Titans a fighting chance to win this game. But tighten up. I've got faith. I've got a little bit of belief that they could go in there and pull this thing off. And I think that if they were to win it, it would be around 31-27 Titans. I think they would have to just muster up an offense that couldn't be, that their defense couldn't even spoil. Like, they would have to outscore Tom Brady and that offense, which could or could not be far-fetched the way you want to look at it. You could say, well, that's not too far-fetched because Tom Brady and company, they haven't played since this whole scandal thing broke about them imploding from the inside and Belichick's gone, even though he said he's not gone, but Belichick's going to leave, even though he said he's not going to leave. I think he's going to leave. And Robert Kraft and him had disagreements over Jimmy Garoppolo. You could say that could play a part in the Titans maybe pulling off a big upset this weekend. But, I have to put my heart to the side here because I would love to see the Titans pull this off. But, look at the Patriots anytime there's been controversy. Go ahead. You had the whole Spygate thing at the beginning of the season where Bill Belichick and company got in trouble for filming Jets practices. Yeah, they only went on to win, 18 games in a row? And he get beat until the Super Bowl. Which, sure. Oh, they did get beat that season. Yeah, but it wasn't until the Super Bowl. Titans aren't playing them in the Super Bowl right now. They're playing them in Foxborough. Okay? It's a little different. Little different. Oh, well, what else? What other scandals do you have? Well, there have been a few under Belichick and Brady, but look, just a few years ago, you had Deflategate, which that season they immediately went on to win the Super Bowl, but Brady was supposed to be punished the next year. He didn't get punished. He escaped that suspension. They didn't go on to win a Super Bowl. But last year, Tom Brady missed the first four games of the season because of Deflategate and people shouting that it's wrong. He doesn't deserve to be suspended. And they respond in a way. They go on to win the Super Bowl. They were down, everybody knows, 28-3 to the Falcons, and they went on to win the Super Bowl. So anytime you want to count the Patriots, I'm going off memory here. This could be dangerous. But I believe it was that same year in 2014 before they got to the AFC Championship game against the Colts and the whole Deflategate thing happened. Patriots got mollywopped by Kansas City early in the season. And everybody, you, were saying Brady is done. It's Garoppolo time. Brady, he's done. His age caught up to him. He's over with. It's done. They went on to win a Super Bowl. He's won two since then. He's a candidate for an MVP this year. Don't ever think the Patriots are out of it. Ever. I don't care what's going on. I have to watch the Titans beat them to believe it will happen. But I'm holding out hope that it will. Now, I know it's a shot in the dark. I get it. But we'll see. We'll see. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, there's still so much to get into. We got all the other matchups, Falcons, Eagles, Jags, Steelers tomorrow, along with the Saints and Vikings tomorrow. That's the later game at 3:40. We'll talk a bunch about that. Some NBA, we're going to have to get into the NBA eventually because it is right in the heart of the NBA season. Football is almost over, so we'll have to kind of transition into that. Some good college hoops going on today as well, including your Crimson Tide and your Auburn Tiger. So we'll get into all of that here in just a little bit, but we've got to take a quick break right here on Tony Mack and the Triplets, 730 1039 The Ump.
Sports Radio 730 1039 The Ump. The Ump.
Welcome back. Tony Mack and the Triplet here on a very frigid Saturday morning. A little dark outside this morning, but rest assured, so far, from what I've seen anyway, from Florence all the way here to Athens, the roads look pretty good. Look pretty good. Of course, some of mine were salted heavily on the way, so efforts at least out that direction were fantastic. So if you want to call in and give an update on the road situation for anybody, 866-485-9867 is how you can do that and let people out there in your area know if they're a little bit of a worry ward. Hey, it's okay to get out. It's just a little cold. Dress warm. The roads are fine. Or if there are areas where maybe there's ice and you shouldn't drive, it's not advisable, then get on here and tell them, hey, this is where we're at. Don't drive out there if this is where you are. Stay at home. Stay warm. Enjoy your three-day weekend. Let's get back into something that's been on my mind for quite a while, and I wondered if I even should do it. But you've got to. I've got to be fair, okay? That's right. You hear the music. You know what time it is. And that, I guess them winning a championship is one of the reasons I'm going to end up going this way. But it's time for the guy you're so angry at, you can't help him. You can't feel sorry for him. You've got to shame him. You've got to slap something on him. Saying he sucks isn't good enough. So you have to slap a face on him, throw him on the internet, and shame him that way. And that's how you do it here, Tony Mack and the Triplet. It is the crying Jordan face of the week. If you go on Twitter, I've already shared mine. And you can see that mine is Andy Papanastas, Alabama's senior field goal kicker. Now, come on with some of you guys. Oh, that's a low blow. Give him a break. Come on. We love that kid. That kid's tough. If it wasn't for the penalty on the first one, he would have made the first one, you know? And, you know, even though the second one looked really ugly and it was nowhere close, you know, he would have made that first one if there wasn't a penalty. And he grew up a lifetime Alabama fan. Don't hate on that kid. If Georgia won in overtime, would you feel the same way? No, you wouldn't. Stop right there. Don't you dare tell me you would, Alabama fan. There's no way you would feel the same way. You would. Oh my goodness, there would be mobs after this kid. And then I would feel even worse for him because he grew up a lifelong Alabama fan. I believe he grew up around Alabama, and all he's ever wanted to do was play for Alabama. He transferred over from Ole Miss to play for Alabama. And what an opportunity. He missed a field goal in the first half that would have given Alabama the lead, 3-0 early in the game. He hit one later on in that proved to be very important, set him up to go ahead and tie the game later on. And it came down to this. It's time to redeem yourself for all the misses, some of the ugly field goals you guys have attempted in the past. It's time to put the Cade Foster era, the Adam Griffith era of almost guaranteeing missing a field goal behind us. It's time to get rid of all of that. It is there is 3 seconds left on the clock. I'm lined up with what should be, for a college kicker, a sure thing. Okay? It is time to win a national championship. I'm going to do it right now. I'm going to go out here, erase all that. I'm going to erase all my mistakes right here. I'm even going to repent for Adam Griffith and Cade Foster's kicking sins. I'm going to erase every bit of that right now and win the championship. It's tied up right now. Time expires. We're going to win it because of me. And you go up there and you hooked it. Now, I get it. I understand. A kid who's wanted to play for Alabama his entire life has the golden opportunity. That is a storybook field goal opportunity for a guy who grew up around here, who wanted to play at Alabama, gets his opportunity to win the national championship for Alabama after he has had a less than stellar kicking career at Alabama. And then he shanks it. I get it. I understand that that is heartbreaking. But lighten up and have a sense of humor, because you won anyway, Bama fans. Alabama fans won the national championship because of a sensational true freshman quarterback and a bunch of other true freshmen at the running back position. I believe you had a freshman guard come in. You had receivers out there. I get it. So don't yell at me for pointing out that this crying Jordan face for Andy Papanastos is deserving. Okay? I mean, come on. When you're thinking strictly football, take your heart out of it. In any instance, you should hit that field goal. I could tell when Damian Harris was on the sideline and they had the timeout going and he was, you know, patting Papanastos on the shoulder, telling him, hey, man, you're going to make this. Don't worry about it. You got this. This is your field goal. You're going to hit this. In any, you know, whatever order he told him all that stuff in, he's telling him he's going to make this field goal. He's reassuring him that we're going to win the championship right now because you're going to kick the game-winning field goal. And Papanastos, in my opinion, looked terrified. Because, in my opinion, I even text a couple of my friends this, while Damian Harris is over there talking, my friend Tanner, who I had on the show a couple weeks ago, actually said, look, Damian Harris is over there guaranteeing Papanastos that he's going to hit this field goal. I texted him back. I said, that just guaranteed he's going to miss this field goal. And Tanner replied, he said, you're right. Because we both know or have an idea, an opinion of the kind of guy Andy Papanastos is compared to some of those other competitors. Some of these other guys, you go up to them and you talk them up and you tell them they're going to do this and they're going to do that. You know, they probably tune most of that out anyway because they're in their own zone. They're getting ready. I think Damian Harris psyched Papanastos out. Now, it's not Damian Harris's fault. That goes to the mental attitude and mental state of Papanastos. I just think mentally he's not that kind of person that needs someone telling him how big a moment is. Now, a lot of people are that way. But I think even more so you could see it in Papanastos with his history, how he handles pressure in big kicking situations. He's not very good at it. Let's just call it what it is. He's a national champion, but he's just not very good at it. I mean, and I'm saying he's not very good because some of the misses he had this year, there was one against Clemson. He missed it both times, but he missed it before a timeout, and then he missed the field goal on the actual attempt. And the actual attempt was fairly close, but the first attempt was an ugly duck. It was something awful. I mean, some of his misses look pitiful. They look like something I would go out there and attempt. So I could just tell that this guy is not the kind of guy you want to go up to and start comforting and telling him, hey, man, don't worry about it. You're going to hit this. You're going to hit this field goal. Don't worry about it. You're going to win the championship for us. He's one of those kind of guys you probably need to just pat on the back and say, here we go, man, and let him do his thing, because I think that psyched him out. I really do. But it doesn't matter, because Alabama went on to win. Which, by the way, since I brought this up, let's just go ahead and talk about how insane that was. Because Tua's getting ready to take that sack in overtime. Okay, he's going back, and he's about down to the ground. And for a split second, he realizes, I really should have gotten rid of the ball. And he's holding it like he wants to throw it. I don't think he was ever going to let it go. But he puts it in one hand and has it carelessly away from his body. It's not tucked in. Two Georgia defenders are around him. Can you imagine? Just think about that. What if they'd gotten a hand in there and knocked this ball out? What if that was a live ball and Georgia won? Think about how differently we would be looking at Tua's opportunity that he got. Think about how differently we would be looking at this Alabama team. That is how important inches are in football, because that could have been inches away from coming out. Instead, he gets another opportunity on 2nd and 26 and wins the national championship by making a great play looking off that safety. And think about how important matchups are, because if it was Oklahoma that won that double overtime game against Georgia in the Rose Bowl and went on to play Alabama in the national championship instead of Alabama playing Georgia, if it was Alabama-Oklahoma, Jalen Hurts has a field day against that Oklahoma defense. He has a field day. I mean, Jake Fromm was 20 of 29 against that Oklahoma defense, I believe. And they ran for that. Their running backs ran for 150 a pop. So, Jalen Hurts, if it's Alabama-Oklahoma, is still the starting quarterback at Alabama. Now you can have all that boiling over frustration that Tua needs to get looks. Tua needs to get looks. That was a bad Big 12 defense. We could have some problems. But it could have delayed it for a long time. We could have seen Tua come in maybe a couple games into the season next year. But the fact remains that if Oklahoma won that Rose Bowl and they played either won or lost Alabama, most likely Alabama would have torched that defense up enough to where they would have outscored Oklahoma's offense. But Jalen Hurts would have had a field day running on that defense, probably throwing the ball as well. And he would still be the starting quarterback at Alabama. So that is how important matchups are to the game of football. And I'm not saying that Tua couldn't have torn that defense apart. He absolutely could have, but he wouldn't have gotten the opportunity. That's how important matchups are, and that's also how important opportunities are. Because Georgia had an opportunity to get rid of that ball because Tua carelessly made a mistake very, very late, but it was hard to notice because Georgia was just focusing on getting him onto the ground at that point. And he turned that opportunity, that next opportunity, into something huge. And now he is most likely the starter at Alabama. He's either going to be the starter at Alabama week one, or Tuscaloosa will burn to the ground. Now, I understand that saying Tua should be the starting quarterback and Saban starting Jalen and me disagreeing is going against Nick Saban, and that is the cardinal sin. I don't want it to sound like that, but I think everybody at this point thinks Tua should be the starting quarterback at Alabama. And why not? What an incredible performance. Alabama, once again, your national champions. Now, the first half, I don't know, and I know everybody's trying to stick this game up there with some of the all-time greats and wants to know where it should stand, and I don't know yet. It's one of those things where I got to let it process, and because a couple years ago when Alabama beat Clemson with the onside kick and everything, there were some incredible plays in that game, and I know everybody thinks that's one of the all-time greatest games ever in national championship games, which it certainly is up there. But I jumped the gun and on thinking how awesome of a game it was right away. Even though, when you look back at it, maybe it's not as high up there as it should be, or as high up there as people are putting it, okay? Maybe not. Last year's championship game was definitely one of the all-time greats. But this one, the first half, was kind of boring. And I've told a couple people that, and they've both responded to me the same way, and that was, yeah, but I'm a little different. I love defense. I thought that defensive matchup was great, though. I mean, the first half, I loved it because the defense was great. I'm not disputing that for a second, okay? I'm not saying that the defense wasn't great. I'm not saying I didn't enjoy the defense. I did. But the one reason it was boring to me was because of how one-sided the game was. Georgia was up 13-0, sure. But go look at every statistic in that football game in the first half. Georgia is dominating that football game. They are controlling that football game. I don't even know if Alabama had 100 total yards of offense in the first half. Georgia had over 200. Okay? That's how one-sided this game was at halftime. That's why it was boring to me. And then the second half was entertaining. Was it good football by any means? No! Absolutely not! With all the turnovers you had in the second half, no, it was not good football. But it was so exciting and exhilarating. So I'm really basing, when I go to rank this game, I have to think about, I'm ranking a half of football. Because the first half was boring. It was very boring. It was not this defensive slugfest. Sure, there were defenses playing really well, but it wasn't a defensive stalemate where nobody was doing anything. No, Alabama's defense was playing hard and physical early in that game, but Georgia, towards the end of the half, was wearing them out. They scored a touchdown right before the half, went down the field on Alabama and scored right before the half. They were starting to wear that defense down. That trend continued into the second half, Georgia would have blown them out, but Alabama had new life, made adjustments. So you have to take all that into account. The first half, you can't just erase that. It was very boring. But man, and you didn't get great football all throughout in the second half. You got very exciting football with the true freshman turning it over. At one point, I didn't know if Alabama was going to start a quarterback next year because Tua came in and threw an interception. But then responds with another touchdown. Papanastas actually hit a field goal. Georgia completed an 80-yard bomb for a touchdown on Alabama. All right? Tua, which I still think his third and seven scramble, won them that football game. That was one of those moments you see that third and seven scramble and you say, this game is over. This, if you believe in momentum, the momentum is fully on Alabama's side right now. And that's why they were in position to go down the field and kick the game-winning field goal in regulation. Georgia's offense couldn't do anything anymore. That second half is a half of football that I will remember forever. You will never forget that half of football. And you will most certainly never forget the last three offensive snaps from the Crimson Tide. That is something that is burned in your memory forever. And if that is enough to put it up there for an all-time championship game, by all means, do it. Because that was incredible. I mean, think about the USC-Texas game, considered the greatest championship game ever, which it certainly is. But it's not like Texas scored, USC scored, USC scored, Texas scored, back and forth, back and forth. USC was winning, was pounding Texas in that football game. And then Texas's miraculous comeback, along with Vince Young's game-sealing touchdown, is what made that special. And it also has to do with who won the game. Think about it. If USC wins that game, if USC was down those points and they came back and won that game and continued their dominance and their dynasty, sure, that would have been awesome. Oh, what a comeback, incredible game. But would it be up there like it is now? I don't think so, because the dynasty team won. So think about this. If this is up there as one of your all-time favorite games, flip the script. What if Georgia was down 13-0 at halftime? They came back in overtime and beat the almighty Alabama. Then it absolutely would be. That plays a big part in it, at least for me. And I think when you look at everybody's all-time lists, whether you think about that or not, that is a factor. That is a big factor. The underdogs, the guys that aren't supposed to win that end up winning, those are the ones that you like most. They're more memorable. Until this one, because it wasn't just Alabama coming from behind. It was much deeper than that. It was Alabama coming from behind because coaching adjustments, player changes, a very ballsy, bold move at quarterback. Tua's finally getting some meaningful snaps in the championship game. this season has to be Nick Saban's best job at Alabama, coaching-wise. And all of them have been spectacular. But just think about that. All the injuries this team's had. They had a little help in the playoff as far as their first-round matchup and getting motivated to play that one because they wanted to beat Clemson. That was a revenge game for them. But, man, that was a lot of fun. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, wrap up this hour and set you up for the second hour, the final hour here on Tony Mack and the Triplets, Sports Radio 730, 103.9 The Ump.
730 and 103.9 The Ump. More sports.
Fourth and five, the national championship on the line right here. He's going for the corner. He's got it. Vince Young scores.
That is the voice of Keith Jackson calling the 2006 Rose Bowl between Texas and USC. We mentioned that game just a few moments ago when we were talking about all-time greats, and I didn't mean for this to be part of the broadcast, but Keith Jackson on that call, iconic football broadcaster, called 15 Rose Bowls, 16 Sugar Bowls, has passed away at the age of 89. So that was his iconic call at the Rose Bowl. Of course, we all know his big-time catchphrase, "Whoa, Nelly." It's a tough day in sports, man. He's also the first announcer for Monday Night Football. He announced the first season of Monday Night Football in 1970. He did that for just a year. But, man, another sports broadcasting giant fell today. So rest in peace, definitely, Keith Jackson. Your family, our hearts go out to you. Man, that is a tough day in sports. It's hard to transition back into anything after you hear that. I mean, that is a man that, just think about the impact he's had on the game. Some of the announcers now, and they'll all come out and say how much of an inspiration he was to them. So you'll get all their names today when they come out and respond to his passing. But think about guys like that. When you hear how old they are and what they broadcasted, the games that they were a part of, you think about that and you understand that that was a part of your history. And yeah, oh, I remember that call. That call was awesome. And that was really cool. That's one of my favorite calls. That was a lot of fun. But think about the sports broadcasting industry. Think about how long that he had been doing this. He pioneered quite a bit. He was the first ever guy to broadcast Monday Night Football for the first season. A lot of the sports broadcasters you hear today are the way they are and are as great as they are and are loved by you the way they are because of Keith Jackson. So when you think about the guys we have now, we've got Herbie and Fowler. We've got Reese Davis up there. You've got Sean McDonough. You've even got Gus Johnson. You've got Joe Tess and Blackledge. You've got all these guys. Adam Amin, Dusty Dvorak. You've got all of those guys out there. Tony Romo and company. You've got Joe Buck. Think about the impact they're having on kids right now in broadcasting school and growing up just as young kids that want to be like that. They want that voice. They're training themselves now. They're learning about sports. They're watching things differently and trying to learn how to call them and see them the way they're calling them. And that goes back to that. That's exactly what these guys had with guys like Keith Jackson. And so that's why it's such an incredibly sad moment to hear that someone like that's passed away. And it's selfishly sad because you don't want him to be gone. But at the same time, you're happy that this man's at peace. He's a great guy. And we certainly thank him for the incredible moments as the one I just played for you. We thank him for all of those moments, and we use this as a celebration to celebrate an incredible career. And once again, just thank you for everything you've given us. And thank you to all the other broadcasters, by the way. Our generation of broadcasters. Guys my age and a little older than me right now that have broadcasters that are actually older than them and not around their same age, thank you. I mean, one day we're going to be appreciating you because you'll be retiring and you'll eventually get old as everybody does. So before that happens and before it's a scheduled time to thank you, I'm going to go ahead and thank you now. And thank you guys for listening to the first hour of Tony Mac and the Triplet. I'll be back with just another hour here. Just a short break. Right here on 730, 103.9 The Ump. Stay tuned, everybody.
It's Tony Mac and the Triplet. With your hosts, Antonio McBeth and Aaron Triplet. Specializing in the world of sports.
I think they're the best team in the country.
Covering your favorite teams.
Alabama wins!
Touchdown!
And talking about whatever the hell they want.
Because he's a good coach. The good talent wants to play for him.
Absolutely not. This is ridiculous.
Now, here they are. Tony Mac and the Triplet.
Welcome back, everybody. Tony Mac and the Triplet here on 730-1039 The Ump. Just mentioned Keith Jackson passing in this last segment before the top of the hour here. I played for you the Rose Bowl call he had with Vince Young winning the 06 Rose Bowl over Texas, or over USC, excuse me, for Texas. Think about all the great calls he's had. I was listening to some of them on the break there, and one of my favorites is the Desmond Howard punt return against Ohio State that sealed him the Heisman. That was, man, that's a fantastic call. Goodbye, hello, Heisman. Just a lot of incredible calls. The impact he had on broadcasting is huge now. Everybody's reacting to it on Twitter and social media now. As I mentioned, all of the broadcasting greats. I hadn't seen any of them before the break, before I made that statement that they would all react and talk about how much of an inspiration he was to them. Wasn't a joke. That's what's happening right now. How much of an impact he's had on what we hear today. So he's definitely going to be missed. Just incredible, incredible run Keith Jackson had. Now, transitioning into the NFL, that was college football. Transitioning into the NFL, we've got the NFL divisional round today. Falcons at the Eagles is your first game this afternoon. Falcons fans, they have to feel good. Carson Wentz isn't playing in this game. Maybe not that he's hurt, but just the fact that they don't have to go up against him. Look, I get that Nick Foles had a good history in certain one-game circumstances and even had a pretty darn good season with Philly back in the day, but the Rams were a way more well-oiled machine last week, and I still feel confident going into last week, excuse me, the Falcons kind of put them to sleep, but I still felt confident in the Falcons playing that game, pulling that one out because of their experience in the playoffs. It worked out for them, so I expect it to work out here. Atlanta's offense has definitely taken a step back, but now that Sarkisian to Seattle rumors have been squashed, this seems like the perfect opportunity to finally get things clicking. Now, a couple things that are different. Number one, they're going to Philly. Okay? It's not St. Louis, or it's not Los Angeles where the Rams really don't have a home. They're going to Philly. This is going to be one of the hostile fan bases in NFL. I mean, that's just what they are. That's what Philly does. They bring the intensity. They're going to scream at you, yell at you, cuss at you, hurt your feelings. That's what it's going to be. That's where your playoff experience has to, that's where you have to pull from that playoff experience. It's got to come from there. Now, the whole Nick Foles situation, that's going to be interesting to watch because you can go back and look at everything he's done in his career and people are going to point out immediately that 27 touchdown, two interception season he had in 2013 with Philly. And then other people are going to say, yeah, but look what he did since then. Sure, the next year at Philly, 13 touchdowns, 10 interceptions, 2,100 yards, wasn't great. And then he went to St. Louis and really was not great, 7 touchdowns, 10 picks. And then at Kansas City, he started 3 games. And then now he's at Philly this year where he started 3 games. Look at his quarterback record. He's 22-17 as a starting quarterback. At Philly, he went 8-2 in 2013. He went 6-2 in 2014. And he's 2-1 this year. That's 16-5 as a starter as the Philadelphia Eagles quarterback. Now, I'm telling you, I felt really confident in the Falcons and pulling from their playoff experience. And I still do. I expect this to be a close game by the time this one ticks at double zero or triple zeros, quadruple zeros, whichever, however many zeros you want to throw up on the board. Whenever there's no time left but zeros, I think this is going to end up a very close game. But you've got to factor in that regardless of what Nick Foles has done, his whole body of work, look what he's done in Philadelphia. He's been very successful. And you have to factor in that crowd. That crowd is a huge deal. So where do you go after that? If you're Atlanta, you have to make sure you're polished all the way through. That means Steve Sarkisian, you and your quarterback have to be on the same page, which has not been the case this year. There have been people blaming, maybe not within the organization, I don't want to throw that out there, but people that think this whole thing is not Dan Quinn's fault, it's not Matt Ryan's fault, it's Steve Sarkisian's fault. It's not on the same page. He's slowing this offense down. This offense is not what it was a year ago. Now, they're still okay, but they're kind of a shell of what they were a year ago. I mean, if you want to look at it, let's pull it up. Total offense this year. I like the per-game stuff. So we're going to go yards per game. Atlanta is 8th, 365 yards a game. That's not bad. They're 8th. Passing yards a game. Atlanta is 8th, 249 passing yards a game. Not bad, top 10. Cool. Rushing yards a game. Atlanta is 13th, kind of middle of the pack, 115 yards a game. Not great, but I mean, overall as an offense, not bad, right? Look what they did last year. Yards per game, 415 or 416, second. Passing yards a game, third, 295 yards a game. Rushing yards per game, they were fifth, 120. Not the same team, except maybe in their running game. I mean, they're only averaging 5 yards a game less in the running game this year. But significant drops from a year ago. Now, I get it's hard to maintain that level of success all the time, and they didn't drop off that far. But those little cracks here and there that caused them to drop off, they might get split wide open in Philly today. We'll see. I'm starting to lean a little more towards Philly. I'm still going to go with Atlanta there. But, man, I could see Philly pulling that one off. It would be a very Atlanta thing to do. Again, as successful as the Falcons look, and they're in the playoffs again, and they had that great run last year, they're still an Atlanta football team. They're still a Georgia football team. They're a Georgia sports team. Historic meltdowns happen for Georgia sports, guys. Last year's Super Bowl, this year's national championship game, the Braves. It happens. Didn't the Braves win like 14 pennants in a row and just got one World Series out of it? I mean, come on, guys. It's not like they're a historically decorated championship state and city. Okay? So it's not that far-fetched to think that Philly with a backup quarterback, with a pretty good backup quarterback, could win this football game at home. The best thing that happened for Philly is to have, number one, have Nick Foles as your backup quarterback, and number two, secure home field. Because you get still a pretty good football team around that home crowd that can turn into a really good football team. So that's the best thing Philly did before Wentz got hurt, and that's seal that number one seed and get that home field there because they need it. Now, I anticipate the game between the Saints and the Vikings tomorrow to be the least likely to be a one-sided affair and a game I really can't wait for. I cannot wait for this football game. If it's a defensive scrum that the Vikings want, then the Saints this season, they've been able to match that. But if it's the offense that the Saints want to put on display, well, guess what? The Vikings have some playmakers too. All around, any way you want to slice this bad boy. This should be a fantastic game to watch. I mean, sure, Minnesota's 11th in yards per game right now. That's pretty good for a Minnesota offense. The Saints are sitting at number two. They average almost 400 a game, while Minnesota's averaging about 357, almost 360. Then you go to passing yards a game. Obviously, that's going to be skewed the Saints' favor, right? I mean, it's got to be. Well, of course it is. New Orleans is averaging 262 yards a game passing. Well, I mean, Minnesota's averaging 234. That's 11th. It's not bad, especially for the third-string guy in Case Keenum. I mean, can we please not forget that? Case Keenum is the third-string dude over there in Minnesota. Okay? You had Teddy Bridgewater out. Done. He got hurt. Sam Bradford comes in. That guy, I mean... I don't know what he's going to need to amputate and just put aesthetics on him. They need to give him prosthetic legs is what Sam Bradford needs. You need to strap him up with some prosthetics because his knees are horrible. So you're down to your third string guy. Now all of these guys apparently might be available today. Bradford maybe, Bridgewater would be, I think. But I went offense there, okay? Obviously, that's something that leans towards the Saints. I mean, Minnesota could be having a good year offensively, but the Saints, that's kind of their MO. They've got Drew Brees, right? So go over to the defense. Yards per game? Yeah, Minnesota is number one in the NFL in yards per game, guys. New Orleans, 17th, 336. They allow 60 more yards a game than Minnesota does. That great passing attack that New Orleans has? Yeah, Minnesota's passing defense, second in the NFL. Second. New Orleans is 15th. Rushing yards a game. Minnesota's only given up 83. That's good enough for second in the NFL. New Orleans is 16th, giving up 111 a game. Sure. People are thinking, oh, that's a mighty offense going up against a mighty defense. And I would agree. But the Saints can play defense too. Especially, they're great at opportunistic defense. Minnesota can put the ball in the air, especially with Jerick McKinnon, the backup running back out there that plays really well catching out of the backfield. I'm telling you, this should be a fantastic football game. Tomorrow, unfortunately, is when we have to wait for that one. Now, back to the Titans-Patriots matchup here. I know we brought this up at the beginning of the show. The Patriots, big favorites over the Titans. I want to see if I'm interested to see. I don't know if the line would drop this late, but the Patriots without a couple of their running backs. Which ones? Well, it's Mike Gillisley out, Rex Burkhead out. Now, I know they've got James White and everybody, but that's a lot of depth gone already off the top for New England. So if Tom Brady's got to put this thing up in the air 60 times, he will, and they will probably still win because the Titans' secondary is the weakest part of this defense. It's a very weak part of the defense. Titans' rushing defense? Everybody likes to sleep on Tennessee. Okay, now I know a lot of guys around here might give me some support because there are some Titans fans around here, but people like to sleep on this Tennessee defense. Now, sure, I'm giving you that. I'm giving you their secondary's garbage. It's 25th in the NFL. I get that, okay? But their rushing defense, they're only giving up 88 yards a game, guys. They're only giving up. They're fourth best in the NFL. Now, well, the haters are going to say, well, a lot of that has to do with them giving up all the passing yards. No one needs to run the football against Tennessee. Well, you're wrong. Because they certainly still do try, and Tennessee shuts it down. Tennessee, unfortunately, is giving up 239 passing yards a game. I don't know that they're going to be able to knock Gronkowski out of the game like they did Travis Kelce a week ago. So this thing could get ugly. That's a big thing that people aren't thinking about. Travis Kelce is a huge instrument in that offense, and over again, even when he was gone, they were dialing up plays for that tight end position. And their backup tight end towards the end of the game was making plays. But at the beginning, it was such an adjustment after Kelce went out to start that third quarter. It was such an adjustment for Kansas City. And Alex Smith and the backup tight end to get on the same page. That was a huge mismatch. Now, Kelce is one of the league's best tight ends. Rob Gronkowski is the best. He's the guy. Now, there might be just a little bit of separation between them, but there's still separation. And Gronk is the best tight end in the NFL. So they're going to have their hands full. The Titans are going to have to score to win this football game. Or get turnovers, force fumbles. It's going to be cold. Now, DeMarco Murray is out, and it's going to come down to Derrick Henry again, but that's what you want to see. You want to see Derrick Henry get the majority of the snaps because he can wear out a defense, especially late in the game. If the Titans are in this game late, then I have faith. If they're in this game late with the ball, because Derrick Henry can... I have faith that the Titans will be able to go down and score, but run clock with Derrick Henry. They don't have to go down quickly and score too quickly. They'll have Derrick Henry and be able to put together a long drive late in the game because that he's so big and he doesn't wear down. He wears you down. He's Mr. Fourth Quarter. But if you're twisting my arm and we're going to have to make picks, straight up I'll go New England, for sure. My heart's going to tell you Titans 31-27. But if we're talking covering, I'll say the Titans cover. You can give me points. Give me the Titans and the 13.5 or the 14.5, whatever the spread's up to now. You can give me that. You can give me the 13.5. I will take it. Because I think the Titans will cover. I think they're a pretty good football team. I think that offense, I think Marcus Mariota found himself last week. He struggled this year, for sure. He's definitely taken a step back after the last 2 years, but that's not who he is. He'll get back to where he was. Go look what this guy did last week. Most guys, when you throw the football and it gets batted back, you're kind of backpedaling, getting ready to make a tackle off an interception. That's what you're getting ready to do. You're getting ready to anticipate that ball being picked, and you're going to try to make a swipe at the legs and get the guy down and out of bounds. Not Marcus Mariota. He went after the ball in the air and scored. He caught his own pass and scored a touchdown. Late in that football game, the game-sealing run, 2 weeks in a row, the game-sealing run to get the Titans into the playoffs, Marcus Mariota. The game-sealing run to get the Titans into to beat the Kansas City Chiefs last week was Derrick Henry, but the big block to open that run that would have been a loss otherwise, Marcus Mariota. Go watch the block and watch what he does afterwards. He stands firm, chest bowed out, on the sideline. Silent, but deadly, is what the Pineapple Express is. He doesn't have to scream and clap and get in your head that way, which I don't oppose to that either. He doesn't have to do it that way. But if you don't believe that man's a leader on his football team, you're wrong, because go look what he did after that and look at the way the team responded. That silent stature that he just stood there. His body and his body language were all the words you need. He didn't have to say anything. His actions, what he just did, were plenty. So if you were to tell me today, without me seeing the score, that, hey, Marcus Mariota had a career-best day today, then I'm going to tell you he won that game. Close, but I'm going to tell you that the Titans won that game. The way that this team has responded around the way he's grown up and been able to overcome a bad season in the last 2 weeks when it matters the most, I'll take that guy. Absolutely, I'll take that guy. Marcus Mariota is the guy going forward. He always has been, and he continues to prove he still will be. I mean, sure, it was easy. It would have been very easy after a bad season to think about that and say, well, you know, I had a pretty bad season anyway. It'd be time to pack it up. Let's do it again next year. We're down 21-3 at halftime. Let's see if I can make some plays. But, you know, if not, you know, we'll just regroup next season. That's not what happened at all. And it starts with that guy right there. It starts with number 8. When we come back, we're going to take a break real quick. When we come back, it's time for that transition I told you about. We're going to transition into a little bit of NBA action. A couple important games happened last night, and we'll talk a little college hoops as well right here on Tony Mack and the Triplet after I get some water to, you know, cleanse my throat here, because talking by yourself into a mic for 2 hours definitely wears down on your throat during flu season. So I'm going to go get some water and take a quick break. When we come back, it's all hoops right here on Tony Mack and the Triplet, 730, 103.9 The Ump.
Tim Williams in the punt. Averaging just under 38 on 44 kicks this year. Nice high kick, got a little wind under it. And it runs Howard back. Look at that. Oh, my goodness. One man. Goodbye.
Welcome back, Tony Mack and the Triplet. That is another fantastic call by the great and late Keith Jackson. Desmond Howard's punt return against Ohio State to seal him the Heisman Trophy. Again, welcome back, Tony Mack and the Triplet here. We've gotten all the football out of the way, so I've got to get into a couple of the important games that happened last night in the NBA. It's my duty to keep you guys caught up and ready for when the playoffs happen. Whenever you make predictions about things, you have to understand what's happening. You can't just come in cold turkey and then look at some scores. I got to let you know. The Cavs got beat again last night by the Pacers, 97-95. But the reason why it's so important, number one, the Cavs are 0-3, I believe, this year against the Pacers. But also, number two, the Cavs blew their biggest lead of the season last night. They went on like a... They were up 22, but they went on like a 20-2 run in the first quarter yesterday, and the Pacers battled back for three quarters. Three quarters, and ended up pulling this game out. Now, the reason why this is important, the Cavs are having a meltdown. That's their third straight loss. They're 3-7 in their last 10 games. They're 26-16 overall. Miami's creeping up on them to steal that 3 seed from them right now. Now, they did have that one big, great winning streak so far this season, but that was sandwiched into two bad stretches for the Cavaliers. LeBron James, again, frustrated. And this comes right after Ty Lue made that speech about players having agendas and having to put those to the side after they got stomped, curb stomped by the Toronto Raptors on Thursday night. Back-to-back road games for the Cavs. They lost to both. This is how they responded. They went out on a 22-0 run to seal the first quarter. They outscored the Pacers 34-12, and you're thinking, okay, they got the message. They're going to come out. This is the Cavs team that's going to turn around and just piss everybody that doesn't like them off because they're going to flip that switch that they said didn't exist. Well, and then the Pacers and Lance Stephenson said, yeah, good luck with that because I'm going to jab my thumb into LeBron James and piss him off, which happened. Lance Stephenson took his thumb and was jabbing LeBron, and LeBron turned and pushed him and got a tech, and LeBron wasn't happy about it, of course. And LeBron said he came out with some interesting comments, which were actually really funny to listen to. He was really upset. He's in his hoodie, his cut-off hoodie, where he's got no sleeves, but he's got a hood on. Like, his head's cold, but his arms aren't. It's weird. LeBron does his thing. But, like, he wants to show off his arms but hide his hairline. I get it. It's cool. It's fine. You got some nice tattoos, but your hairline is that of a, 60-year-old man. That's okay. That's fine. But he came out and he said that Stephenson was a little dirty. He's a little dirty. You got to expect that with him, but he played pretty well tonight. Here's his exact quote. Lance is just a little dirty, that's all. He's a little dirty. I should have known. I've known since school. It's not the guy who tells the joke that gets caught. It's the guy who laughs. They caught me on the retaliation. He played well, though. LeBron, you've got the perfect responses to everything, and I love it. That's great. But there's just something about you, man. I don't believe ever. I just don't believe that you're in it for the team. I believe that you were in it for Cleveland. For a while. Now, I think it is strictly about LeBron James. I do think there's a switch. You turn down that thought, that idea, that there is a switch that you guys flip. You don't know nothing about no switch. You said that after the Toronto loss, but I don't believe you there. There's too much evidence in you guys not playing well enough in the regular season and turning a switch on in the postseason and looking completely different. Now, I get that other teams aren't always – championship teams aren't always the one seed out of their conference. Sometimes they're the two and the three, which the Cavs were the two last year. I get that. I'm not just talking about not playing well enough in the regular season to get the one seed and then playing better in the playoffs and getting to the finals. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about looking like a completely different team in the playoffs. You look better, faster, more into the game. That's because you're more focused. You're more determined than you are in the regular season. And because it's working for you, I guess that's fine. I mean, Ty Lue's not going to say it's fine. No coach is going to tell you that's fine. They don't want that. But the problem is now for the Cavs, you have this switch. You don't have another utility weapon offensively, consistently anyway. You've got LeBron James, and other than him, you've got a bunch of specialists. Kevin Love, before he came to Cleveland, was a lot more than just a specialist, but that's what he's become. I mean, you got Channing Frye, you've got J.R. Smith. They're all just specialists. Kyle Korver. The only guy that's designed to create anything in Cleveland right now is LeBron James. And if it's not him, and if he's not playing at 100%, they're going to get their butts spanked. You've got Isaiah Thomas. He hasn't found his legs quite there in Cleveland, so it's unfair to say that he's not panning out. He just hasn't found himself into that offense yet. It's an adjustment to get used to playing with LeBron. Kyrie's not your scapegoat anymore. You don't have him to bail you out offensively, who's incredible at creating by himself. Is everybody starting to see why Kyrie wanted out now? Everybody wanted to blast him for saying, oh, well, he wanted to go do his own thing and be the guy somewhere, but can he be the guy on a good team? Can he be the guy and make that team really good? Yes. Hell yes, he can. Have you not seen the Boston Celtics play? Everybody wrote them off 2 minutes into the season when Gordon Hayward broke his leg. And now they're playing with these incredible rookies, a great coach, led by Kyrie Irving, and they're the one seed right now. They've got the second best record in the NBA, maybe. They're right up there. They've beaten the Warriors this year. They've beaten the Cavs this year. They've beaten the Rockets this year. They've come back from 26 down against one of those teams. They've done it all. He can be the guy on a really good team. He can be the guy because he is. But are you starting to see why he wanted out now? I mean, look at this Cleveland team. They're designed for LeBron to be the guy. That's what LeBron wanted forever. Hey, this is what I want. I want guys that can do this and shoot here and shoot there whenever I need to kick the ball out. And that's what he has. And now, while he has those guys, he's not given 100% in the regular season. While, again, that's fine because it's worked for them. Why the hell would Kyrie want to not give 100% in the regular season? He's a 25, 26 years old. He's a young guy. He doesn't want to coast through the regular season. And sure, championships are nice, and getting spanked in the finals and making an appearance kind of wears on you after a while. But Kyrie wants every game to mean something. He wants the regular season games to mean something, which normally it didn't happen when they played Toronto, but typically when LeBron James and his little regular season switch he has, he'll flip that thing back on when they play a good team like Toronto or Boston or Golden State. He'll play well then, and he has been playing well. I mean, his numbers look great anyway, but his plus-minus tells you differently. He's not playing all that great, mainly because I don't think he's giving an effort. He's getting very frustrated because it looks like his team doesn't really care. That's what you get, LeBron. You're not only the leader, you're basically the head coach of your basketball team. You're basically a player coach, and you're given a half-ass effort. So you can't expect your team to want to go out there when their leader and basically their coach is doing that. But you're the one getting frustrated. And your team sees you get frustrated, so they're frustrated. You have a big responsibility that you just don't get. And if you do get it, you're not doing a very good job with it. And I'm tired of well, look, he's still made it to 8 straight finals and blah, 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 blah. Yeah, that's fantastic. But it's also his fault they're losing those finals. I'm sorry, I'm just going to say it. It's his fault. Look, that is blasphemy. Blasphemy. Look at his numbers in those finals. Look at the minutes he's played. Look at the heart he's putting into those games. Sure, I agree. But the reason his supporting cast around him sucks and can't compete with the Golden State Warriors in the finals every year is because of LeBron James. He put that staff together. He wanted those guys, and they're not panning out. He didn't want guys that were going to take the ball away from him that could try to get to the rim and try to create. He had Kyrie for that. That's all he wanted there. All he wanted besides that, he turned Kevin Love into a spot-up three-point shooter. He went and got Channing Frye and J.R. Smith and Kyle Korver to spot up shoot threes when he wanted to give the ball up. But don't you dare drive to the rim. Don't you dare take that ball up the floor and take a possession away from me. I am the king. That is my ball. That's why they're losing these finals. It's LeBron James. And if his numbers in the finals are erasing that for you in your mind, and you're saying, well, his numbers he's putting up, they should be winning finals like that. His other guys got to step up. And you're blind to see the fact that those other guys are guys LeBron wanted. It's not that those guys aren't bringing what they were supposed to the table. They are. Now, all of a sudden, you're asking them to do more. Their spot-up three-point shooting in the finals isn't enough to beat the Warriors, number one, because the Warriors play great defense. So now you expect them to do more. Well, JR can't just shoot the ball. You got to get to the rim. You got to take that. You've got to shoot that, or you've got to do this. That's not why they were brought there, guys. I'm sorry about it, but that's not why they were brought to Cleveland. They were brought to Cleveland to pass the ball to LeBron and to shoot when he tells them to. That's why they were brought there. So again, it's his fault. You can't blame those supporting role guys for being expected to do something more than they were supposed to do all along. That's why they're here. Channing Frye is there to shoot three-pointers. Kyle Korver is there to shoot threes. J.R. Smith is there to keep a shirt on and shoot three-pointers. Kyrie Irving was that balance. He was that guy to get to the rim. He was that guy. He was the reason that Cleveland has a legitimate gripe that they could have won back-to-back championships had Kyrie not gotten hurt the first time they played the Warriors. If Kevin Love can be Kevin Love that he was in Memphis, was allowed to be that Kevin Love, which at times he's been this year, they could have won one more of those finals. But that's not what it's not what Cleveland wants. That's not what LeBron James wants. And that's all Cleveland cares about. Because he is the burden that they are blessed with. He is that burden that is from Cleveland. He is a Cleveland hometowner, so they have to listen to him because he is their legacy. He is. He's their legacy. They ran Kyrie off for LeBron James. They let LeBron bring in whoever he wants to bring in. It's a yes, sir type of deal. And instead of the NFL's version of saying yes, sir to Jerry Jones, everybody's turning around and kissing the feet of King James. This is 100% LeBron James' fault. Don't let anybody tell you otherwise. I wish Aaron Triplett was here with me because he is the biggest LeBron James fan. Him and his brother follow LeBron James wherever they go play basketball, wherever he goes and plays basketball, and roots for him. And he would be the first to tell me I'm wrong there. But you can't tell me I'm wrong. Because when I ask you why they lost the finals, he's going to tell me along with everybody else, the Warriors went and got Kevin Durant then because they couldn't beat Cleveland without Kevin Durant. Well, one, I would agree with you. That is the reason that they went and got him, because Golden State looked after that 73-win season and thought, well, you know, they beat us this year. They could have beaten us the year before but Kyrie was hurt. So we got to do something. And they did. And on the flip side, now Cleveland doesn't have Kyrie. And I believe that's partially because of LeBron. Kyrie wanted out to be the guy. LeBron says, oh, I was giving him the keys, blah, blah, blah. Well, obviously you weren't keeping your guys happy enough, coach. That's what you're supposed to do. Instead, you got all these other guys you want to make you happy and to get you the ball and get the rebound and get you the ball. That's why there's no trade talks for another guy that's gonna take possessions and create shots for other people coming to Cleveland. No, the trade rumors are to get DeAndre Jordan, a guy that can rebound the basketball and give it to LeBron James. They're trying to shore up that defense, which is probably something they should do. But good old selfish LeBron, they're not going to win the championship this year if they even make the finals. And good old selfish LeBron is going to leave and go to L.A. or wherever and leave that program again, that franchise, in shambles. They're not going to have Kyrie Irving. They're not going to have anybody that can get to the basket. They're going to have Isaiah Thomas. And Isaiah Thomas had a remarkable season at Boston last year. But he also had a great coach. I don't believe Ty Lue is anywhere close to Brad Stevens' level of coaching. So good luck, Cleveland. Congratulations. You played yourself with LeBron James. You're letting him get away with too much. Because he's giving you a fighting chance in the finals. He's giving you at least a shot at a championship. Well, it's hurting you guys. It's hurting him. Am I the only one that's got the eyes to see that? Who knows? Another, I wouldn't say important game as far as finals implications or playoff implications go, for that matter, happened last night in the NBA. And that was between the Golden State Warriors, minus Steph Curry, and the Milwaukee Bucks. And man, what a game this was. Milwaukee came back and had a lead late in this game, and the Warriors went on to win by 14. They pulled away in the fourth quarter, outscored them 28-12. The Bucks went on a 33-17 run in the third quarter. That's when they took their lead. The biggest takeaway from this game for me, while I was watching this game, especially that third quarter, was, damn it, that Milwaukee's Buck team, if they could be more consistent, man, they're going to be really good. I love Jason Kidd as their coach. I love the dynamic they have. They're super big, everywhere but athletic as they progress and get older together, that's going to be a hard team to beat, guys. And I know Boston's looking really good, but the size and athleticism of this Bucks team is unbelievable. You got Eric Bledsoe, who's like the oldest guy on this team, pretty much. He's 28 years old. This is his eighth season. And the other guy, his backup, Malcolm Brogdon, his second season. Did he win Rookie of the Year last year? I think he might have. 25 years old in his second season. Jabari Parker, if he could ever get healthy, he might be back before the All-Star break. His fourth season, he's their power forward. Chris Middleton, his sixth season, small forward. He's 26 years old. You got Thon Maker, their center, who's in his second season. John Henson's the starter. He's 27 in his sixth season. These guys are huge and young and athletic. And then, of course, you got the Greek Freak, who's in his fifth season. He's averaging 28.5 this year, 10 rebounds, essentially, and almost 5 assists a game. And keep in mind, now he's listed as a power forward this year. But keep in mind, he's played anything from point guard, shooting guard, small forward, and power forward. This dude is 6'11", and he handles the ball like a point guard. You get him just over half court, he can make it to the rim in three strides. This team is going to be something serious in the next couple of years. I'm telling you. I know you've heard it a bunch of times. I've been saying it for a while, but they just keep getting better with the addition of Eric Bledsoe this year. If Jabari could be healthy, he'd be great. Malcolm Brogdon playing really, really well. Their center situation down low with Maker and Henson is just unbelievable. Watch out for Milwaukee in the next couple of years. I know they lost that game and they let it slip away from them big time last night, but I'm telling you, watch out for this Milwaukee team in the future. And watch out for the last segment here on Tony Mac and the Triplet. Coming up right after the break, 7:30, 103.9 The Ump. Welcome back. Tony Mac and the Triplet here, 7:30, 103.9 The Ump. Last segment, just about 5 minutes or so more here to go on a wonderful Saturday. I will get you off to your NFL action today. But first, yeah, that's right, but first, college hoops. We got a good slate of college hoops today, and it starts with the Auburn Tigers going on the road to take on Mississippi State. Now, Auburn escaped Ole Miss, and I say escaped. They beat them pretty handily, but they overcame a 10-point. They were down 10 at halftime, I think. This is a very special season for Auburn, and this could be a very tricky road trip here going to Mississippi State. Now, Mississippi State is 13-3. They've lost to number 25 Cincinnati on the road. Then they rattled off five wins in a row. Then they've lost back-to-back games, back-to-back road games. They lost at Ole Miss, at Florida. So this could be a big chance for them to come back home and regroup against the Tigers. I think it'll be a dogfight. I'm going to pull for the Tigers here. Bruce Pearl is coaching this team phenomenally this year. Austin Wiley is out for the remainder of the season. He will be ineligible. Daniel Purifoy, they have yet to announce the situation going on with him. His status still up in the air. But all of this, of course, has to do with the Chuck Person FBI scandal going on. So I'll keep you updated on that. But Austin Wiley is out for the remainder of the year. Now, on to the other side of things. Alabama, the Crimson Tide, they have to go on the road as well tonight, 7:30 on SEC Network. You can hear the game here on the Ump. Coverage will start at 6:30. They're taking on LSU in Baton Rouge. Now, this LSU team is scrappy. They're 11-4. All right, they've lost to Notre Dame, bad, very badly, almost by 40. They lost to Marquette, SF Austin, and then Kentucky. They lost to Kentucky by 3, and then they beat Texas A&M on the road, and then they beat Arkansas on the road. Now they're at home against Alabama. Do not write this LSU basketball team off. They're very scrappy. Very, very scrappy. Alabama tends to play down to their competition. Do not count this team out. Colin Sexton's going to have a huge day, followed by John Petty probably as well. Riley Norris, this team got a lot younger after Riley Norris got hurt. So this road trip is going to be testy for this Alabama hoops team here. So good luck there to both Alabama and Auburn. I like them both to pull it out. I think Alabama's going to struggle more with LSU than Auburn struggles with Mississippi State, if that's how this thing would play out. But I think they're both going to pull them out and win. There are some big ones on today. You've got, out of the Big 12, West Virginia and Texas Tech. That is a top 10 matchup, as West Virginia is 2. Texas Tech is 8th. That's a big one. Clemson and Miami, 18-19. Clemson did just lose the other day, but Miami going to Clemson to take on. Kentucky plays Vanderbilt on the road today, 3 o'clock. Check that one out. Notre Dame, North Carolina as well. You Tennessee fans out there, the Vols host the Aggies at 5 o'clock today. You can see that one on the SEC Network right before the Alabama game, so check that one out. You can watch Trae Young play TCU at noon today. That's a 9-16 matchup. One of the more exciting guys in college basketball, probably in the country right now. Well, there you go. There's your college hoops for today. All right. Now, if you weren't with us in the first hour, you're set up for the NFL. You got two games tonight, or today, not tonight. You got one tonight, two today. You got the Falcons-Eagles starting at 3:35, NBC. Check that one out. I'm sure you will. I don't have to tell you to. I'm really excited to see the ratings for these divisional round matchups. And then you've got, at 7:15 tonight, you got the Titans at New England taking on the Patriots. Man, I'm hoping for a good one. Fingers are crossed. Mariota's going to have to do something special. Need to see him roll out a bunch to take down this Patriots team. And then you got the Jaguars and the Steelers. Noon tomorrow. Tomorrow is going to be kind of the normal schedule as far as NFL games go. You got noon tomorrow, Jags-Steelers on CBS. And then on Fox, the best game of the afternoon, the best game of the weekend, in my opinion, Saints going on the road to take on the Vikings. So check those games out this weekend. I'm sure you guys will. If you listen to the Tom Abraham Show on Monday or on Tuesday, I will have a great reaction open for you involving those games. Now, you hear the music dropping because that's going to do it for me. That's it. I'm sending you off. I'm letting you fly, my little birds. It's time to go enjoy your weekend. Your three-day weekend, by the way, for most of you. No work on Monday, no school for the kiddos. So enjoy it however you want to do that. I'm going to go cuddle up with my wife and have a fantastic weekend. I hope you all do the same. Thank you for listening. I've been Tony Mack. Thank you. Tony Mack and the Triplets, 730, 103.9 The Ump. Have a great weekend.